always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
New Louisiana law requiring the Ten Commandments to be displayed in every public classroom in the state from kindergarten all the way through state-funded universities by the start of 2025. The commandments must be on a poster-sized display with, quote, easily readable font and include a four-paragraph context statement detailing how the Ten Commandments were, quote, a prominent part of American public education for almost three centuries, according to the legislation drafted by the Louisiana GOP. Opponents say it's unconstitutional, that it's an egregious melding of church and state. Supporters say the purpose of the measure is not solely religious, that the Ten Commandments have historical significance.
4:07, and welcome into the Thursday sweltering edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, which is really appropriate because we have a very hot show for you today. And I just want to say, Joey and I today have reached the pinnacle of our broadcasting careers today. Tim is out. He is on assignment today and tomorrow. And guest hosting, sitting in the big chair for Tim, is the legend Larry Connors from Larry Connors USA, who you hear after this show from 6 to 8. You're going to get 4 hours straight of Larry Connors today. Larry, do you think the folks can handle that?
I assume there'll be something extra in my paycheck. I'm looking forward to it. I'm honored that you guys would ask me to fill in. And Tim's kind of old. He needs to take a long rest. So I said, I'll step in. I'm young, athletic. I'll take care of it for you. Thanks for the offer.
Yeah, what that means is instead of walking the course, he's taking his cart today. So yeah, exactly. So, Larry, you heard that clip coming in there. The Louisiana General Assembly has said that schools must place the Ten Commandments in their schools. Most people that are listening would say, hey, that's a violation of separation of church and state. The Supreme Court has already ruled that something like that is unconstitutional, they will say, even though if you go to the Missouri State Capitol, you will see scripture there on the Capitol. If you go to the Supreme Court, you will see scripture on the side of the building.
Look at your money.
Exactly. Larry, you know, you were around when it was okay to express.
No, I thought you were there when Moses brought it down.
You remember when it was, people weren't ashamed to say prayers in school and to say the Pledge of Allegiance and all of that. Are we getting back to what some of the liberals call a 50s Ward Cleaver, Leave It to Beaver America with this ruling?
I would like to think we would, because we do need to turn back to a time of innocence before all this woke stuff started. But Governor Landry, he's anxious for a legal fight. Said, bring it on.
He did.
But there's one thing that they did not do, as he detailed how large a sign should be and large font and everything else in English. Because there might be students who can't read.
Yeah,
and I'm talking about by the fifth or sixth grade. So there's going to be another issue.
Yeah, exactly. And also, too, Larry, we are in the final stages of this Supreme Court term. Right. They're looking at today and tomorrow some of the big cases being resolved. One of the cases that everyone is waiting on, of course, is the January 6th presidential Trump immunity case. If the case goes the way the president wants it to go, he'll have 100% immunity. Others are thinking that he'll get some type of partial immunity. And what this case is based on, they're saying, is a misinterpretation of the law, and that some of these defendants could be released if the Supreme Court rules a certain way, and a couple of the charges against Donald Trump could be dropped as well.
Well, in fact, a Texas grandmother was jailed in those political retaliation, or claims political retaliation, did win at the Supreme Court on her ruling. She got a ruling. She's a Texas ex-councilwoman who got thrown in jail on an act of political retaliation. Now, that tells me the court's going to be more lenient on some of this stuff going forward. Now, that's just that one case. There are a lot of factors underlying it.
Now, there was a decision that was released today, Larry. It was a case. The court rejected a challenge to the repatriation tax created in the 2017 tax reform, which targets the money businesses make abroad. Apparently, a couple does a lot of overseas business and sued. And looks like the court rejected that. The progressives, where I'm reading, are happy about this because they see this as some type of opening to go after a wealth tax. You know, if you're a billionaire and you've got some money offshore, and you know, like people like you, Larry, I know you have money in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, I've got it stretched all over. If you go on a beach and pick up seashells, you're picking up some of my cash.
There you go. And so they want to be able to grab some of that money, and the court seems to have rejected that challenge by this.
Well, you know, there's always a matter of using what you can against the people, and they talk about taxing the rich, and who's the rich? I remember when my dad used to complain that, you know, that all the rich are getting away, and suddenly he realized with his income and everything, by new standards, he was considered to be rich.
Right.
He never thought he was rich. He just thought he was maybe middle class or lower. He was an oil field man. We grew up moving from home to home or mobile home from location to location because oil field, unless you own the oil field company, you didn't make that much money. So people still work. I saw today, on Fox Business News, pointing out that the taxes against the gig workers, something like 3,000% increase on those for tax issues in 2023.
Yeah.
They're going after people that are just trying to get by, and they might have to have that extra job because of inflation and Bidenomics.
Well, Larry, Joe Biden told us that he will not raise taxes on those who make under $400,000. Are you trying to say that these little taxes that they're charging us, gas taxes, the inflation tax, other things, are you saying that Joe Biden may have not told the truth, Larry?
Well, let me put it this way. Were his lips moving? I have a friend. We were sitting last night talking, having a cigar, and he was saying, my wife just got noticed today that her student loan got forgiven, something like $30,000. And he said she kind of feels bad about it because she's a Trump supporter. Mm. And he looked at me and I said, she shouldn't feel bad. Other people are taking advantage of it. If she gets it, good. Because he did not buy her vote with that.
Right.
That's what a lot of this has been about, trying to buy votes. Pandering.
Larry, you forgot to mention that at the cigar bar, you also had an adult beverage with you.
Oh, I always have an adult beverage.
You left that.
I take it.
You left that out of the equation.
I start that early. Then once I know I'm going to get ready to go in a couple hours, I start diluting it with water.
There you go.
The taste.
That's very tasty.
Flavored water.
Larry, I could talk to you all day, which we are for the next 2 hours. I'm going to let folks know who our guests are today. Of course, we have Steve Bucci, who we have every Thursday. He's our military expert, and he's a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We've got a lot to talk to him about what's going on in the Middle East. NATO has finally has a new director. Ukraine situation there. Got a lot to talk with Steve Bucci about at 4:25. At Chris's Corner, I think we're going to scratch Chris's Corner today and just have more conversation with the legendary Larry Connors on topics of the day.
I'm honored. Maybe you give me time in your corner.
and maybe Larry will give us a preview of what's coming up on his show after ours from 6 to 8. 507 is another open segment. If you want to call in, 314-912-1019. I want to talk to Larry specifically, and I know it may seem like I'm beating a dead horse on this, but at 507, just the prevalence I've seen now when I watch the Sunday shows and I watch all the journalists ever since Donald Trump has become president. You remember they had the Donald Trump lie meter,
right,
where they told how many lies he talked now. And so because of that, Larry, journalists have taken upon themselves to fact check.
Excuse me, you're using the wrong word when you say journalists, but go ahead.
Quote unquote, I'm using air quotes.
Journalists
have taken upon themselves, I'm sure you've noticed this too, where they'll fact check the interviewee right in the middle of the interview. Mm-hmm. And it won't be just one fact checked. They'll just continually going, where you're almost like, are you an objective interviewer or are you working for the Biden administration? And you see a big prevalence of that. And I know they rationalize that in their head because, hey, Donald Trump's a liar. He's putting all this misinformation out. His acolytes now have taken that same tactic. So we need, in the entrance of the public, we need to correct these quote unquote lies before they get out there. And it's just very annoying. And it really, to me, shows what they're really all about and whose team that they're on. Keep that thought, because that's what I want to talk to you at 507, because you are a journalist. You've been in, and I'm not just trying to make you feel old. You say this on your Facebook page. You've been in journalism 50 years. Yep, so sir. You've seen it all. And I want to definitely get your thoughts on that.
My pleasure.
And at 524, really eager to talk to Michael Reagan again. We had him on last year around Father's Day. He had a new book out called Lessons My Father Taught Me, The Strength, Integrity, and Faith of Ronald Reagan. We're going to catch back up with him, talk about his book, and get his thoughts on politics of today and the recent 80th anniversary of D-Day, where his father gave that famous speech 40 years ago. That's Michael Reagan at 524. So, Larry, we've got a great show today. Buckle up your seat. Buckle up your seatbelt. I'm glad you're doing 4 straight hours of radio on News Talk STL.
Well, it sounds exciting. I'm glad I'm part of it. Here I am in the studio, of all places.
Exactly.
And on live stream.
You know, Larry, we've got the big debate next week out of Johnny's Hideout. The must-see political TV.
Oh, it's going to be. I mean, we're going to have such a great time. It'll follow my program, yes, Thursday evening. But we will all be, when it starts and it's underway, we'll be out at Johnny's Hideout, and that's going to be a debate watch party.
It's going to be a definitely watch party. We learned today, Larry, that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did not meet the ballot access requirements to be on the debate stage.
You know,
next
they decided
week.
Today. You know, they decided today with a coin flip. They had a coin flip.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
I thought you were joking.
No, I'm not. This is serious. They had a coin flip, and they could decide if they wanted to choose position on the stage, or they could choose closing remark. Biden team chose tails. Whoever chooses tails in a flip. Anyway, it comes up tails. So they have a choice of either choosing where you are on the stage or do you want closing remarks? Mm-hmm. They chose will be on the stage as you look at the stage to the screen right. So it appears to be on the right. Is that it?
Yeah.
And Trump on the left. So Trump gets to choose, I'll take the closing remark. Mm-hmm. How stupid would you have to be to give the closing remark to Trump?
Yeah.
Seriously.
And in any debate, you always want to have the closing remarks so that what the audience, the last thing they hear is your
like
thoughts.
Like a jury. Like a jury with the prosecutor in the final wrap-up of the case.
You know, they say that Joe Biden's out of it and is not part of things. It sounded like he was part of the negotiating team.
He might have flipped the coin. He dropped the coin. Maybe that's what happened.
You know, Larry, we've talked a lot about Joe Biden lately, just his freeze-ups, how we're wondering if the Democrats are going to throw him off the ballot. Joe Biden actually got a little bit of good news today. I don't know if you've seen this Fox News poll.
I did.
That has a matchup between President Biden and President Trump, and it shows that President Biden is up by 2 points, 50-48. Previously in May, Donald Trump had a 3-point lead. And I'm just wondering, is all of the noise that we've been hearing from the hush money trial, the verdict, the constant drumbeat of that, do you think that is what's bringing these polls down? And do you think this Fox News poll is an outlier? We haven't seen any other polls.
There are going to be a lot of sways back and forth. I mean, the poll that's going to count is November 5.
Exactly.
But the other point being, at the same time you're reading that, I see a report. I want to say Politico. I don't have the source in front of me. They are seriously worried about Biden and his performance at this debate, and they may ask him to step aside. There are 4 people that would have to be in agreement, apparently. Obama, Clinton, Schumer, and Pelosi.
Is it that order?
Probably not. Well, it probably is. But basically, if they decide after that debate, we can't continue with him, they would jettison before the September 10 debate, you know.
Yeah.
Right, was that the day before? Right before 9/11. I was thinking it's the day after, but I think it's the day before. That would be after their convention in Chicago, so it would probably be done there if they're going to do it.
And Larry, the next question is, do you put Kamala Harris in, who has a lower approval rating than Joe Biden? No. And then that's another dilemma for the Democrats? Who do you pick?
They don't have any candidates. They don't have any bench strength. They don't have any issues. They don't have anything they can stand on other than challenge. All that you see with your eyes about Joe Biden being led off the stage. Let me share a quote from you, if you don't mind. This is a quote from one of their big donors. They are recognizing every day just how deep this guy is into it right now. One of their big donors, I can't find it right now, but he is noted that it did not look right for the leader of the free world to have a former president take him and lead him off the stage. Now, if you look at the video, Obama reaches out with his right hand, takes Joe Biden's left wrist, his wrist,
yeah,
like you would a child.
Larry, that's a cheap fake.
Yeah. Well, everybody saw the cheap fake. So, and then as you follow it all the way as they go off the stage before the curtain drops, he's got his arm around him like they're walking off for a couple of guys walking off for a beer. That's okay.
Yeah.
But then he puts his hand in the lower back of Biden, continuing to move him forward. Mm. I would love to know what Obama was thinking while he was doing all that. How do I get this guy off the stage without stumbling?
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of vice presidential picks, Jim Clyburn, of course, who rescued President Biden's presidential hopes in South Carolina in 2020, who was a former leader of the party, he was interviewed by Politico, and they were asking him to rattle off some names of future leaders of the party who could take over if Joe Biden, you know, steps aside.
Right.
He mentioned Senator Cory Booker, New Jersey, Wes Moore, Governor of Maryland, Gavin Newsom, of course, Josh Shapiro, the governor of Ohio, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. Are there any names there that are missing there?
I think you put all the names at the top they have because, again, they don't have that many. That's the issue. Mm-hmm.
There is one, Kamala Harris. He did not mention Kamala Harris.
I took it that you mentioned her going into it. No,
he didn't mention her and all the people that they rattled off.
I'm sure he was thinking, she's already on the ticket. I'm sure that's what he thinks. Mm-hmm. I was talking earlier about billionaire Bill Ackman. He's a longtime Democrat Party donor. And he said, some people are old at 81. Others are sharp, vigorous, impressive. Compare Warren Buffett at 93 and Biden at 81. Biden is an old 81 who can't find his way off the stage, stay present, and focused on a G7 conference. He said, is that what the leader of the free world should be for the next 5 years?
Yeah.
That is one of their main donors.
And I think it's very obvious to people that are watching him that it's not age, it's mental capacity.
And to that, I feel sorry for him. But also, His wife, Jill, should be keeping him up, saying, you know, the man's not capable. Let's quit putting this kind of pressure on him. But they love the power.
And one final thing before we go to break. Larry, you know, here on the show, we follow President Biden's schedule, and it's usually kind of like two, maybe three things a day.
Next 7 days of preparing for the debate.
Exactly. He's sleeping. Doing nothing. Monday, he came back from the G7. The next couple of days, he's in Rehoboth Beach at the beach house. The only thing on his schedule today was 10 a.m., the president's daily briefing. That's it. That's 2 days in a row. So the president of the United States needs 8 days of debate prep and rest and out of the public eye in order to be ready for this debate. I think that spells or says a lot there. Coming up, Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, will talk about all of the things that are happening around the world military-wise. And at 5:24, you want to stay tuned, we'll have Michael Reagan, son of Ronald Reagan and president of the Reagan Legacy Foundation. We'll talk to him about his book, Lessons My Father Taught Me. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show with Larry Connors, guest hosting on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, Soros Free Radio.
Someday.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Russian President Vladimir Putin's visit to Vietnam is taking place at a time when Moscow is facing growing international isolation because of its invasion of Ukraine. This is Putin's first visit to the Southeast Asian nation since 2017 and his fifth in total. For Putin, the trip is to signal that Russia is not isolated in Asia despite the Ukraine war. For Vietnam, Russia remains an important partner, not just for long historical ties, but also because Russia is the biggest supplier of military equipment.
4:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. And Larry, Putin seems to be on a world tour there. He has visited North Korea, now Vietnam. We got the perfect guest on the line to talk about just what Putin is up to.
Steve Bucci, visiting fellow for special ops at the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yes. What were you about to ask me?
Do you expect me to talk?
Steve, welcome into the show. My partner, Tim Jones, is not here today, but I don't want you to be nervous. You're going to be speaking with a St. Louis broadcast legend, Larry Connors. He's going to be interrogating you today, as I will, sir.
Well, I was excited when they told me Larry was on the show, too.
Thank you, Steve.
Hey, you heard that clip there of Putin, I almost called him Rasputin, Vladimir Putin traveling to Vietnam. He just signed a pact with North Korea. Vietnam is a communist country, of course, but they've been very friendly to the West and to the United States as well lately. What is Putin up to, and do you think he made any inroads with Vietnam?
Well, I hope not. You know, it's totally unsurprising that he went to North Korea. North Korea is one of his few real friends in the world, and North Korea is getting money from Russia for all of the artillery shells that they're providing, because they got a boatload of them that they've had stockpiled since the end of the Korean War. Vietnam is a different kettle of fish there. That is concerning, because Vietnam has actually been very friendly to the United States, especially since they don't really get along with China very well. So I hope that Putin is not making any inroads, and maybe we might get some benefit out of this, because I have a feeling whatever they talk about, Vietnam may share with us, which would be a good thing, but if they go the other direction, that would be very negative.
Well, may I ask a question along that line? Because they apparently did sign, Russia and North Korea, a mutual defense treaty. I don't know that that would really be enforced, but at least they put their signature to it. What's your evaluation?
Well, I wish they hadn't done that, but I think it's not surprising, and I don't think it's going to would change much in their relationship. But I hope we don't see that happen with Vietnam. I would rather see Vietnam either stay non-aligned or be our friend than to hang out with the likes of Vladimir Putin. We have to wait and see. You know, countries are going to chase their own national interests, and we'll see what comes out of this in the next few weeks.
Speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Speaking of Russia, Steve, House Intelligence Chair Mike Turner gave a speech today at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and he said that Russia is seeking to launch nuclear weapons well above the Earth's surface, and he says that the Biden administration is quote-unquote sleepwalking into a potentially catastrophic modern-day quote-unquote Cuba missile crisis in space. Is this hyperbole? How serious is this?
Well, you know, the Russians do have that capability. I think they would be ill-advised to do that sort of test in space, because, for one thing, there's a ton of satellites up there, and if you explode a nuclear device of a sufficient size in space, nobody's really sure how many satellites they're going to damage and what the result would be. It's kind of crowded up there now. It's not like back in the 50s where there was hardly anything up there. So I think if they did that and damaged a bunch of satellites, I think there would be even more blowback than they've gotten from the war in Ukraine. And I'm not sure Vladimir wants to push it that much. You remember, he has rattled his saber with regard to nukes quite a bit since all this started. And he's, you know, he hasn't pushed it because, frankly, nobody's you know, buying it and nobody's rolling over. So it hasn't turned out to be a useful tactic. But they do have the capability. So you have to at least be concerned and have to pay attention to it.
Steve, and I thank you. I was looking forward to this with you as well. Steve and I, he's been on my program for maybe a dozen years. I mean, he's got 30 years Army Special Forces, so he's
may have stolen it from you.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you're on loan to them for right now. We got that, right? Steve, but you mentioned Ukraine. Now, Ukraine today is claiming that it now has capability armaments provided by the U.S. to strike deep into Russia, not along the border, but deep into it.
They do. Some of the long-range rocket systems we've given them, they've got quite a bit of range and are very, very precise, which means, you know, they don't have to be gigantic to do damage to the specific targets that they're used against. And I think if I was sitting in a Russian command and control facility anywhere, this would be a good day to go downtown and drink some dinner, because I'm not sure you'd want to sit in headquarters.
Speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. One more Russia question, Steve. We know that Russia has been holding a number of American hostages. The most famous, of course, is Evan Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter, who has finally gotten a court date, and his secret trial is going to be starting soon. A top Russian official said yesterday that they are, quote, awaiting a response from Washington to its proposals for a possible exchange of prisoners. Are we seeing a thaw here? Could we expect some of our people to come home soon? What is Putin up to here?
Well, I think Putin is, you know, trying to maintain some kind of relationship with the West, and particularly with the United States. I think he is probably assessing that if he pushes the issue, he can get Biden to, you know, to pony up probably more people than what he would release from Russia. So it's a good opportunity for him to try and get some advantage there. We'd like to get these people back. You know, the idea that Gershkovich is a spy is ludicrous, and the Russians know that. But they're going to continue to try and take advantage of that and, you know, pull this kind of nonsense. Unfortunately, you know, while we'd love to get these people back, whenever we do these kind of deals, particularly when they sweeten it with money, it encourages these adversarial countries to do the same sort of stuff again. And that's not a positive thing for us or anybody in the world.
And Hezbollah is taking a greater and greater advantage of Israel's battle with Hamas down in Gaza on the southern side of Israel. Hezbollah is now firing numerous rockets into northern Israel, displacing 8,000 to 10,000 Israelis. But that's being kind of ignored by those who shot from the rivers of the sea. And Hezbollah leaders are now saying that if you strike back, basically all hell will break loose. In other words, they will use some of those weapons they've got. And Russia's sided with them. China sided with them. Iran supported. This is a flick of a switch away from World War III.
I'm not sure if it'll turn into World War III, Larry, but it will potentially widen the conflict there in Israel. I mean, it's been ongoing from the first couple of weeks after Israel started their response to the October 7th terrorist attacks last year. Hezbollah has offered rhetorical support and has been firing their, you know, they got a ton of missiles up there that have pretty much all come from Iran,
right,
into northern Israel. And now they're starting to feel the pressure, because Israel is going, okay, we're almost done with Hamas. We're going to make the north safe next. And I think Hezbollah is trying to thump their chests and deter Israel from doing that. I don't think they're going to be successful in that deterrence. I think Israel will call that bluff. You know, like earlier today, the leader of Hezbollah was saying, well, you know, we might even have to start shooting at Cyprus. And I think they're probably talking about the British sovereign base areas in Cyprus,
right,
not just the government of Cyprus facilities. And if they do that to the Brits, those bases are pretty darn important to the Brits and, frankly, to us. We've used them quite a bit in conjunction with the Brits. If Hezbollah tries to fire at them, I think the response will be very heavy and very directed, at least I would hope it would be. Not that I want to see the war widen, but we can't let groups like Hamas and Hezbollah dictate to anyone, to Israel or to the region, what's going on. They're terrorist organizations that need to be shut down or at least made, it's not of any particular influence. And the only way to do that with bullies is to punch them square in the nose.
Absolutely.
Steve, one thing I want to ask you, I want to get your thoughts on Netanyahu disbanding his inner war cabinet. That happened since last time we talked. And I want to get your thoughts on the little tit-for-tat that happened this week when the prime minister put out a video that was questioning why were arms being withheld from Israel. Our government, the White House, canceled a high-level visit with Israel that was supposed to be happening today. Who's at fault there? Did Israel embarrass the United States? Was this warranted for the United States to cancel this meeting?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on where you sit. The Biden administration, you know, initially was very, very supportive of Israel and everything they were doing. They were checking with the United States, cooperating. But when Israel made the decision to continue the assault, particularly into Rafah, when the Biden administration made such a public thing about them not doing it, because Netanyahu said, look, I appreciate your advice, but I don't work for you, and I have to follow what's in the interest of my people. That, you know, like it did with Barack Obama, he didn't like that answer either. and the Biden administration took offense to that and started to squeeze them on the specific weapons, particularly the 2,000-pound JDAM bombs. That are very precise and very useful in these situations.
But they're talking about that those kind of bombs would be so much collateral civilian casualties. Well, if you would let all the civilians loose from the war zone, you wouldn't have that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And, they are big devices, but they're very, very precise. They're not dumb bombs. They're our most accurate airdropped weapon systems. And that's what Israel means. If you want Israel to have less casualties, you're never going to avoid collateral casualties altogether in an urban environment. But if you want to lessen them, you should give them more precise weapons, not take those off the table. So, you know, this is, we get surprised when Israel doesn't agree with the United States. But there are cases where they have to follow the decisions of their own counsel. They can listen to our suggestions, but they are not a client state. They are going to do what they feel is in their interest. And that really kind of ticks people like Joe Biden off. You know, Jake Sullivan is giving him, you know, advice on how to fight the war. And Jake's never been in the military, to my knowledge.
Jake's been in the Boy Scouts, Steve.
Yeah, and I, even with John Ratcliffe, he's got a title, but I don't know that his service, your service is exemplary, by the way. One final question I have, and that's back into our homeland security, and that is the illegal immigration. I mean, we continue to hear the cries and concerns about terrorists already inside our nation, maybe a fifth column from Chinese military age men that would come inside. How direct threat are we facing, you think, at this point, that's being ignored by this same administration?
I think it's a tremendously dangerous threat, Larry. You know, remember, you don't need to bring in thousands and thousands of people to be a threat. Most of those people coming in are probably no threat at all. But we have about zero handle on the individuals coming in, that thousands and thousands of so-called gotaways,
right,
that we don't even know who they are, what they look like, anything, you know, and those eight people that turned out to be, you know, essentially terrorists that didn't get away. They came through the normal entry point.
Yeah, but they had no way to vet them because there's nothing they can vet, so they turn them loose in the country. Mm-hmm. You're free to roam about the country.
That's right.
And come for your court date in 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you only need a couple of dozen of those people to do a heck of a lot of damage from a terrorist standpoint. And that's what worries me. You know, we're not talking about Chinese divisions coming into America, but as you guys know, on September 11th, it was just a couple of dozen guys did all that.
Yeah.
And so to not capably vet these people before they're released into the country is lunacy. And it has been since the get-go.
Mm. Steve, I got one final question for you before you get away. Today, Hungary lifted its objection to the Dutch prime minister becoming the next head of NATO. That clears him for the way to lead the alliance. Now, this is what is concerning to me, and I want to get your thoughts. The Dutch prime minister gave written guarantees that he would not force Hungary to take part in the military alliance's new plans to provide support to Ukraine. Was that a good use of their power there to hijack that nomination there to make sure that they don't have to participate in NATO drills?
Well, it's not that they wouldn't participate in any NATO drills. I mean, to be honest with you, even the Chapter 5 response, you know, the attack on one is an attack on all, that doesn't mean even today that every member then has to send military to fight. Each country still maintains its sovereignty to make a decision that if they don't want to go and do it. It was like, you know, when we went into Iraq, NATO for the most part did not participate. Now they helped us in Afghanistan, but they didn't all help in Iraq by any means. So I think the Hungarians made their point that they are not necessarily in line with doing ops in Ukraine, particularly under the NATO banner, and that's their right as a sovereign nation. So I think they've made their point, and they're not holding this up, you know, forever and ever. So I don't necessarily agree with it, but I don't see it as a big detriment to NATO or to Europe in general.
Steve, once again, we've went around the world in 15 minutes. Thank you, as always, for your time, sir. And we will speak with you again next Thursday. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care, and thank you for bringing another old friend on.
We'll do that. Thank you.
God bless you, Steve.
Larry, when we come back, we're going to talk about Dr. Fauci admitting something that he was adamantly would not admit during the pandemic crisis. You're shaking your head there. I kind of think you know where we're going with that. Dr. Fauci, where does it end with this guy? America's doctor, Dr. Fauci, the science, as he called himself at one time. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Last year, St. Louis became one of more than 30 municipalities in the country to offer a guaranteed basic income. The move uses millions of dollars in the American Rescue Plan money, or ARPA money, to provide $500 a month to families for 18 months.
So now a St. Louis nonprofit is suing the city, saying the program is unconstitutional. The Holy Joe Society filed that suit saying the state constitution claims any city or county in Missouri can't give public money to individuals or corporations. The lawsuit also claims the program violates the city charter because it says only families with children enrolled in public schools are eligible. A judge has ordered St. Louis to respond to that lawsuit by June 28th.
4:53 on the Tim Jones and Chris Tharp Show, and sitting in for Tim today, of course, is Larry Connors. Larry, did your parents used to say to you, you know, when you were when you had a birthday, you got some birthday money, mm-hmm. or you had a little windfall, and mm-hmm. you wanted to go to the store so bad that that money seems to be burning a hole in your pocket?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm getting that same feeling with the St. Louis, city of St. Louis, and this Rams money. We have rent assistance. We have pay for your license plate tags if you give high on your personal property tax. Right. And now just, hey, we'll give you $500 just because.
And they want to know why things aren't working and why people aren't working. And they're taking, what, how many millions of COVID money to repair King's Highway?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did King's Highway cause COVID? Yeah. Did I miss something?
Exactly. And look, I'm as compassionate as the next person. And, you know, Jesse Jackson hasn't said a lot of wise things in his life. And one thing that he did say that was wise, you give a man to fish, you feed him for a day. You teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. I mean, are we really helping these people, Larry, giving them $500 for a relatively short period of time, and then all of a sudden that money's going to be cut out and you're on your own? Are we helping them in the long run?
No, I don't think so. And I if you recall it, one time on my stint, I posed as a homeless person on the street.
No, I did not.
I did as one of a, quote, undercover type thing.
Okay.
For 60 hours on the street. But, of course, I still had food and everything for my family. They had a shelter. And I was just living off the street. And a lot of people looking at me disgust and everything else. Sleeping actually on the riverfront bricks down there.
Was this
on a
sweep
cold,
weeks?
Cold December.
Was this sweep weeks?
I did not sleep either.
No, it was this sweep week.
Was this ratings week? Preparing for it. I mean, you don't do anything if you're not going to get ratings for it.
Exactly. So what year? This is fascinating here. I don't remember this. So what year was this that you posed as a bum?
On the top of one, I probably still can pose as a bum. But I think at that time, I want to say it would have been, I'd gone back over to Channel 4 in 87, probably about 91 or 92, something like that. And it was a good piece in the sense of trying to show it. But again, and the only time I would get in a car would be to speed up a location from one spot to get to another.
Sure.
But I stayed outside all that time. But again, you can't get the mindset of someone who's out there on the street on a daily basis. Mm. I go to the same corner. I went to one the other day that hadn't been by for about 4 years, and the same group of five people out there working that corner. And it was hot as it could be that day as well. And I'm thinking, if you can do this, and you're still, why wouldn't you go down there? And I rolled down the window one time and said, there's down the road. They thought they were going to give me money. They thought that I was giving them money. They come over and said, down the road, less than half a mile, they've got help wanted signs.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to work.
I did that. Yeah. Pulled over, and I told a story here, and the guy was like, oh, come on, man. I was like, there are plenty of jobs. Why are you out here? And he kept saying, no green card or something. And I was like, are you here legal? You know, if you don't have a green card, are you here legally? He said that's why he couldn't have a job, because he didn't have a green card.
Yeah, a lady tried to pull that on me one time and said, they will hire you without it, believe me. At some of these places, you'll get hired.
I tell you who is back. About a year or two ago, there were a band of gypsies. I know that's an old Jimi Hendrix album.
You're politically incorrect, but go ahead. There were
a band of gypsies that you would see around town, and it'd be the husband, the wife, two or three kids, a little baby, and then they just kind of disappeared. I've seen them again. They're back. And one of the ladies, literally, she was sitting at a chair at a intersection and was like breastfeeding her baby, while the husband was panhandling.
That really ticks me off when they bring their children out. Leaving one of the casinos downtown, a woman brought her four kids, figuring everybody leaving the casino would have some money. Mm-hmm. One quick thing, my daughter, she said there's one place that she goes down, Lindbergh, and there's a guy out there, and she stopped to offer him $10 bill one day. She said, no, I only take 20.
Sure. Wow. Boy, beggars can't be choosers. I think I've heard that somewhere before. 524. more, Michael Reagan, son of Ronald Reagan, will be on the show coming up. And at 5:07, we've got an open segment, 314-912-1019. If you want to talk to Larry Connors, listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9-94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.